December the 13th, we thought everything was fine. I was out for the day on business in the UK. I came back in to read an email from the project controller, Karl Meisner, in Germany. We don't know how many pieces the satellite is in. We've had an explosion. And communication has been lost. This was, I have to say, somewhat devastating, because between December the 13th and December the 18th, the 5 days it took to find that satellite, we were pretty convinced that we were in a lot of trouble. On December the 25th, 24th in Australia, or 26th in Australia, ZL1AOX found the satellite and was able to switch on the S-band, S2 transmitter. And everybody collectively gave a sigh of relief, I'll tell you. Then we began to put in, try and assess the damage, switched over the telemetry beacons so that it would come on the S2 transmitter, find out what the situation was, and we began to find we got a good satellite. By December the 29th, we at least knew that there was a problem, what the problem was, and we were beginning to reorientate the satellite in January and February last year. By March and April, during the accident, it spun up. It was only doing about 2 RPM, and it went right up to 17 RPM. This was quite worrying, because we knew some force was driving it up there. We think that force was loss of fuel, that the fuel coming out was somehow or another speeding up the satellite. Anyhow, we managed to get the spin rate down, because at 17 RPM, the heat pipes that we had talked about with anhydrous ammonia stopped working. The anhydrous ammonia was being treated in a centrifuge and just wouldn't do what it was meant to do. So we had to get the RPM down. We got it down to 5 RPM by using the magnetorquing rods, and we didn't use the thrusters at all, because the thrusters, we were pretty convinced if we used those, we'd just jettison more fuel and in the wrong places. S2 opened on May the 5th to the public. 70 centimeters up, 2.4 gig down. I took personally, got up at, my time would be 4:30 in the morning. I got up, I worked all over North America, partly over Europe, and at the last part of the pass that I could, I talked into Japan, Australia, and New Zealand. I couldn't have been happier. It was a fantastic day. Since then, we've tested the RUDAC A and B, we've tested the memento reels, we know what radios are working and what aren't. We feel we've got a good satellite. When you look at the lists of what is working and what isn't, the unusual stuff, the Omni antennas, the U-band transmitter, the S1 band transmitter, we know are wrong. We are pretty certain that the C-band receiver will not work, and the X-band transmitter, since this time has been proven, the X-band transmitter is not right, but the Ka-band transmitter is just doing fine. There's a laser experiment on board that hasn't been tested. The S1 and S2 band receivers have not been tested because we're working, as I said earlier, with the S1 or the S2 transmitter. So we don't want to be S-band up and S-band down. We haven't got enough isolation between the two. Other than that, you can see, the thrusters, 400 newton thruster, we're not going to even try that again. The ATOS thruster, that has an interesting story. We had to raise the perigee. We said, now there's two ways to do this with this thruster. We can just use the ammonia that goes to that, and if we force out enough ammonia, it will in itself raise perigee for us. So how much ammonia do we put out? How long for? So they did some calculations. And we wanted to raise from about 300 kilometers to about 550. We carried it all out, found we were at 900. What it means is, though, being at 900, we're in such a stable orbit that there's certainly nobody in this room who should be alive to see this satellite come back to Earth. It's going to stay out there for probably another couple of millennia. So, and hopefully it'll keep working. Generally speaking, in my opinion, this satellite is a success. There are many hams who would disagree with me because the V-band and the U-band transmitters are not operational. And they would say, that is a problem, I can't receive it on my equipment. To be honest, the cost of going to put in S-band equipment is so minimal in Canada and Canadian dollars, which are awfully similar to Australian dollars, I'm looking at probably $150, $200 on top of my existing equipment. The equipment I would have used to communicate whether or not I'd used S-band or not. And it is very, very simple. I managed to buy a suitable TV, what we call a barbecue grill dish. It's about a meter high and 60 centimeters wide. It's got a very simple antenna on it. I feel it should be a right-hand circular polarized antenna, but it isn't. But it gives me good downlink. I go back up on a 70 centimeter feeding my normal 70 centimeter beam, which is, I think, a 16 element cross right-hand circular polarized Yagi. It works just fine. I'd have had to have had that beam anyway for the 70 centimeter. I'd have to have had the rotator. After that, all I need is the $150 worth of dish and down converter. And they're very relatively cheap. In fact, I know in the US I can get a down converter for $54 US, 108 Australian, whatever. And the dish is another $30, $40 maximum. I'm sure you can do the same, get very much the same here. So, generally speaking, things are working, they're working well, and I really recommend to any of you to have a go. It's a great satellite, it works extremely well, and I say, on the very first day, I talked right into New Zealand, from the centre of Canada, right into New Zealand, into Australia, into Japan, into Europe, because it covers half the Earth at any one time.